शांतिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
So we continue with the introduction to Upanishad. I hope everybody read the introduction today. Yesterday you didn't know, but today you... So everybody did read it? Who didn't?
I didn't.
Okay. 50%. So yesterday we spoke about the Vedas. The Veda means knowledge. And in the beginning of the introduction, Srila Prabhupada said that Veda means knowledge. Any knowledge you accept is Veda, for the teachings of the Vedas are the original knowledge. So in the beginning of creation, the Lord revealed the Vedic knowledge in the heart of Brahma. There is such a verse from the Bhagavatam, first canto. Tene Brahma Hridyadi Kavaya. So the Vedas are the original knowledge in this universe. It's just like Prabhupada gives the example, when you buy a machine, some device you want to use, and it goes together with what is called manual. It's a small booklet, and inside there's a description. What is the purpose of this machine, and how to use it properly? And Prabhupada gives the example with this manual, and this is actually spiritual, the knowledge given in the beginning of the creation. These are the Vedas. So the Vedas explain first what is the purpose of this material world, who we are, what is our relationship with the world, and with the controller of the universe, and our controller, Krishna, and what is the ultimate goal and how to attain this goal, these three things. What is the field, how to operate this field, and what is the ultimate result we will get if we properly operate this field. Therefore, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this explained, it is said that there are three great riches in the Vedas: Sambandha, Vidaya, Prayojana. There are three topics discussed in the Vedas. So there is often we think about the Vedas in a limited way. We think just the Vedas just describe the spiritual goal of life. And if you notice, many devotees live this double life, dualistic life, like a kind of schizophrenic life. From 4:30 till 9, we are devotees, and then when we go home, then it's not so easy to say, it's not so sure to say what kind of lifestyle you have. Because Srila Prabhupada says in many places that this is our responsibility to mold our life in a way that we can always 24/7 remember Krishna. So when we in the temple and we do all this direct devotional service, then we're supposed to remember Krishna. But when we are not directly engaged in these five most important activities, then what? Many people say we're just living our lives. So as I had a friend, and he was telling me, you know, Pandava, listen, this is books are books. He meant Prabhupada. Books are books, and life is life. think often that the Vedas are just spiritual knowledge is a spiritual knowledge, and our material life is our own thing. But interesting thing about the Vedas, unique thing about the Vedas is that they deal with all aspects of our life. They teach us how to go back home to Godhead, and they also teach us how to live our material life and how to connect it with Krishna so that it doesn't entangle us in this material world and it is elevating to the ultimate goal. Therefore, the Vedas, as we mentioned yesterday, one of the standard classifications of the Vedic knowledge is Paravidya, transcendental knowledge, and Aparavidya, which is defined as material knowledge, knowledge of this material world, connected with the goal of life, pleasing Krishna, and going back home to God. So the same body of knowledge, if it's not connected with Krishna, is called avidya, ignorance. It binds us, and we stay in samsara, although we might be pious persons. But if you're pious, it doesn't mean you get liberation. It's not enough. So if you want to go back home to Godhead, there is a portion of the Vedas that deals with this. And if you want to go back home to Godhead, but you still have some material desires, there is vast amount of scriptures that deal with these material attachments, and they explain how to connect them with Krishna and to purify them and obtain the same goal at the end of life. So there is no duality. The Vedas deal with everything, with all our desires, material or spiritual. There is no need to go outside of the Vedic context to fulfill our desires, even if they are material. Because the Vedas describe these four goals of life, Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. And in our tradition we have even what is called what is this? The fifth goal? Prema Pumartha Maham, the fifth goal of life, goal which is the love of Krishna. So is there anything else that we need? A human being needs just these four things, Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. They are all defined, described in the Vedas. And if you want to go even beyond this, in our Sampradaya we fortunately have another dimension. So the point of all this talk is that we don't have to go outside of our Vedic tradition to find anything. There is no knowledge that is independent of from the Vedas or beyond or higher than the Vedas. Because the Vedas are the original knowledge. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada says in Bhagavatam, in the first canto, I'll read this, it's a quote from the purport. The original source of knowledge is the Vedas. There are no branches of knowledge, either mundane or transcendental, which do not belong to the original text of the Vedas. They have simply been developed into different branches. They were originally rendered by great, respectable and learned professors. In other words, the Vedic knowledge, broken into different branches by different disciplic successions, has been distributed all over the world. No one, therefore, can claim independent knowledge beyond the Vedas. So naturally, when the original knowledge comes down to disciplic succession, different disciplic succession, different parampara systems, it gets a certain flavor. It's nature. Like if you in Mayapur, even if we speak even inside our tradition, inside our sampradaya, if you live in Mayapur, there is a certain mood here. But if you go to Vrindavan and you associate with the Gaudiyas there, there is a certain subtle difference in the mood. And if you go to Puri, also there is different mood. The same Sampradaya. But even inside the Sampradaya, there are different ways to approach Krishna. So what to speak when you go outside of our Sampradaya, then the flavor is even more different. although we are all Vaishnavas. So when the original Vedic knowledge leaves the Vedic context, and this will happen, this is naturally happening again and again, Krishna explains in Gita that this happens because of the time. Because of the influence of the eternal time, knowledge appears to be lost. So when the original knowledge leaves the Vedic context, it gets even more far out, different flavor. And so much so that the people from the non-Vedic environment, they will claim that this is their knowledge. And even the devotees often won't be able to make the connection to see how this apparently modern knowledge actually has its origin in the Vedic knowledge. It's Vedic knowledge actually. So even this quantum physics, the cutting edge of modern science, all these things, they are still based on the Vedic knowledge, because this is still the material energy of the world, and it still works according to the rules that are set by Krishna. And also the brain of this scientist who is trying to figure out how all this works, it's still made by Krishna and still controlled by Krishna. So there is nothing outside of this Vedic paradigm. To be able to see this connection, of course, one should have some deep realizations in Bhakti. So this is what this course is all about. To see everything in connection, to be able to see everything in connection to Krishna and not be bewildered by the tricks of the modern society, the modern people. So what happens when you don't know that there is a manual, and maybe you, even if you know that there are some strange people, they say there is a manual, but you think these are some old superstitious and naive sentimentalists, and you think, oh, we are modern people, we are clever, we're intelligent, and we can figure out for ourselves what is the purpose of this machine, how it works, and how we can, what is our goal of life, and who we are, and what is the process for attaining the goal. So what happens then? You have the machine, but you don't have the manual, you don't believe that there is a manual, so what happens then? What do people do?
Experiment.
So they push and poke this machine, and they get some, sometimes they get some reaction. The machine reacts, and when the machine reacts, they will claim that this is their invention, this is our knowledge, we invented this. It's like when Newton discovered this law of gravity. So it's not Newton's law, it's God's law. This law existed before Newton sit under this apple tree, and will exist after Newton is vanished. It still, it doesn't prove anything. It's still, the machine is still there, and it still works under certain rules which are not established by the human beings. They are established by God. And if you want to make the machine work, you still have to know the proper way. The car will start only if you put the key inside and turn it. It won't start otherwise. So this is the same with this universe. And the material energy will work only according to the rules of God. And what happens as a result of this guesswork that the modern people are doing? If you go to the West, you'll see what is the result. People are, first of all, they are very miserable, and second, they live in a very weird condition. Material facilities, the material facilities in the West are terrible. This is the greatest they proud themselves that they improve the material facilities. But I'm coming, I just spent 6 months in the West. It's really, even the material facilities, they don't know how to eat properly, they don't have clean air, clean water, practically. It's misery from inside and from outside. So this is what happens when people try to just to guess what is the goal of life and to try to figure out how the universe works. They end up like this with the modern so-called civilization. They use this precious human form of life as a just for sense gratification, which is like if you have a sports car and you try to plow this field with this fancy car. And you can do it, I guess, for some time before it breaks, because these fancy cars, they are not meant to drive slowly. It will break very soon. But you could do something meanwhile. And this is what the modern man, not knowing what is the goal of life and the purpose of this creation, they do their human form of life, which is meant for something else. So. And that's why in the another place in Bhagavatam it is stated that the Vedas are not just beautiful quotation is beautiful string of holy names, but they are also a set of binding ropes that binds us with its instructions. So if you follow the Vedas, you get proper result and you can attain liberation, go back home to God. If you don't follow, you're bound in this material world. In samsara and suffer. So we'll continue from yesterday reading. You have the books in front of you? Some. Another defect, to be illusioned. Illusion means to accept something which is not. Maya. Maya means what is not. Everyone is accepting the body as the self. If I ask you what you are, you will say, I am Mr. John, I am rich man, I am this, I am that. All these are bodily identifications. But you are not this body. This is illusion. So illusion means, in this sense, that we think the source of our happiness is matter. But we are spirit souls and we cannot be happy just by connecting ourselves to matter. So the source of our happiness actually is Krishna's potency, is Krishna. But we don't see this and we think like two lumps of matter, as Maharaj was explaining this morning, two lumps of matter when they get in contact, they'll produce somehow happiness. And because this illusion exists, then there are so many mistakes on the basis of this illusion. Bodily identification. So the first imperfection is mistakes, then Prabhupada points out illusion. And then the third defect is cheating propensity. Everyone has the propensity to cheat others. Although a person is fool number one, he poses himself as very intelligent. Although it's already pointed out that he is in illusion and makes mistakes, he will theorize, I think this is this and this is this, but he does not even know his own position. He writes books of philosophy, although he is defective. That is his disease, that is cheating. Cheating others by posing as a learned man. I think in Dharma Shastra somewhere, Manu says that if you have a wrong philosophy, you just get the reaction for it. But if you preach this philosophy to others and mislead other people, then you get 100% the reaction. So it is very dangerous position. There is such a proverb a little knowledge is dangerous. You have very little knowledge, and you don't know even your own position, but you pose as a learned scholar, and you teach others. This is what is going on in the modern society. By all these so-called learning men, they cheat others. And in, we'll see later in Ishupanishad, one of the mantras, it says that it's one thing to be in illusion, to be in ignorance. You're just ignorant fellow. But it's even worse if you have knowledge, material knowledge, which is not connected to Krishna. This is even more dangerous. The result is even worse than just being in ignorance. Because first you can misuse many other people around you. And second, your own illusion is very deep, because you have some brain to go even deeper into illusion. We may call the... We go on. Lastly, our senses are imperfect. We are very proud of our eyes. Often someone will challenge, "Can you show me God?" But do you have the eyes to see God? You will never see if you haven't the eyes. If immediately the room becomes dark, you cannot even see your hands. So what power do you have to see? We cannot therefore accept knowledge, Veda, with this... We cannot therefore expect knowledge, Veda, with these imperfect senses. With all these deficiencies in conditioned life, we cannot give perfect knowledge to anyone. Nor are we ourselves perfect. Therefore we accept the Vedas as they are. You may call the Vedas Hindu, but Hindu is a foreign name. We are not Hindus. Our real identification is Varnashrama. So here, Hindu, Prabhupada says we are not Hindus. That means that there are no Hindus actually. Hindus. This is just a geographical term. It's like saying something about I'm living at Khurgad, you're living in Kodrumbi. Even people in India, they're not Hindus. In this sense. We are not Hindus, we are Vaishnavas. Even the people who live here, they're not Hindus. Because this is a term designed by someone outside of India, just as a designation for people who live beyond the river, on the other side. And what we are Vaishnavas, and we follow the Vedic culture. So there are things. By philosophy we follow the Vedic philosophy, the Vedanta philosophy, the Vaishnava philosophy, and we follow the Vedic culture. Because philosophy, when it is applied in a practical life, it becomes culture. And the Vedic culture is the most convenient environment for following the Vishnu philosophy. It's not that it's not possible by following different culture to be a Vaishnava. This has been proved also in the West. It is the best and the most convenient and the most pleasing way for Krishna. If you follow the Vishnu philosophy, you follow the Vedic culture. And they go together very nicely. Varnashrama denotes the followers of the Vedas, those who accept the human society in 8 divisions of Varna and Ashrama. There are 4 divisions of society and 4 divisions of spiritual life. This is called Varnashrama. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, these divisions are everywhere because they are created by God. The divisions of society are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Brahmana refers to the very intelligent class of men, those who know what is Brahman. Similarly, the Kshatriyas, the administrator group, are the next intelligent class of men. Then the Vaishyas, the mercantile group. These natural classifications are found everywhere. This is the Vedic principle, and we accept it. Vedic principles are accepted as axiomatic truth, for there cannot be any mistake. That is acceptance. Not like some devotees say that we accept certain parts of Bhagavatam which deal with the absolute truth. We accept that Krishna is God, there is spiritual world, and by chanting the holy name Krishna we can purify ourselves and attain perfection. But we don't accept the other parts of Bhagavatam where there is a description of a golden mountain medal which we never saw. And the description of the universe is just ridiculous. And there is also a description of a certain king having ten million wives or something like this. These parts we don't accept. Bhagavatam is just it's a poetry after all, and we have to know that in poetry you use certain it's called hyperbole. I don't know how it's in English. Hyperbole.
Hyperbole.
Yeah, just embellishing.
Hyperbole.
Mm-hmm. Embellishing the text, the poetry. It's just ridiculous, of course. We are modern men, we are intelligent, we don't accept this. Nice stories. So we don't, obviously Prabhupada didn't accept Bhagavatam like this, and Vedic texts are not to be accepted like this. We choose one part and we accept, and another part we don't accept. So how do we actually understand the picture of the universe from Bhagavatam? That's another story. You might not be able to, at the moment, at our level of realization, to fully understand, but we accept it anyway. Because this is Shastra, and it's not to be doubted. And what speak of being rejected? This is demonic. Okay. For instance, in India, cow dung is accepted as pure, and yet cow dung is the stool of an animal. In one place you'll find the Vedic injunction that if you touch stool you have to take a bath immediately. But in another place it is said that the stool of a cow is pure. If you smear cow dung in an impure place, that place becomes pure. With our ordinary sense we can argue. This is contradictory. Actually it is contradictory from the ordinary point of view, but it is not false, it's fact. In Kolkata, a very prominent scientist and doctor analyzed cow dung and found that it contains all antiseptic properties. It is like with our diet, we follow that Prabhupada gave us. There was recently some research, some British scientists, they were researching where in the world people eat most healthy food, the best diet, where is it? And the result was that in the Indian villages they eat the best, they have the best diet. And in the villages they eat basically the same thing what Prabhupada gave us. Well, of course if you go to the south then it's a little different, but the principle is the same. This kind of food. So we do something like touching, instead of accepting that this is the best, we often have to hear from the karmis. If they confirm, then we are happy. We are relaxed. But sometimes it's difficult for us to accept that this is the thing, this is the best thing we have, the best culture, the best philosophy. So in India, if one person tells another, you must do this, the other party may say, what do you mean? Is this a Vedic injunction that I have to follow you without any argument? Vedic injunctions cannot be interpreted, but ultimately, if you carefully study why these instructions are there, you'll find that they are all correct. So these are the two ways. Either we can accept, or if we don't want to accept, then there is the scientific research. But both, if the research is done properly, it will also lead to the root of everything, which is Krishna. This is mentioned in Bhagavad Bhagavad Gita, purported by Prabhupada and also in the verses Gita mentions. That there is the same result. By Sankhya and by Yoga, there is the same result. So, if the scientific research is real, it will lead to Krishna, and if it doesn't lead to Krishna, it is wrong. It's done in the wrong way. Just mental speculation. So better to save some time, if we're going to get the same result. Better to apply ourselves in the process of devotion, so otherwise you waste so many years or lifetimes. Bhakanam janmanam ante gyanavan mam prakare. As it is explained in Gita. Of course, this shouldn't be blindfolded. It should be with intelligence and understanding. The Vedas are not compilations of human knowledge. Vedic knowledge comes from the spiritual world, from Lord Krishna. Another name of the Veda, for the Vedas is Shruti. Shruti refers to that knowledge which is acquired by hearing. It is not experimental knowledge. Shruti is considered to be like a mother. We take so much knowledge from our mother. For example, if you want to know who your father is, who can answer you? Your mother. If the mother says, here is your father, you have to accept it. It is not possible to experiment to find out whether he is your father. In another place he said that the Vedas, the Shruti, they speak as the king. The king speaks. The subject just should obey and follow without any argument. But the Puranas, the Smritis, they speak as a friend. They explain with simple words, very often with examples from history, why the injunction should be followed and what will be the benefit for you if you follow and what will be the result if you don't follow. So that's why we have Shruti, the Vedas, and we have the tradition. We have the laws of God, and we have the examples from history how different people applied or misapplied this knowledge and what result they got. So in this way it becomes very very nice. It's like in some law systems you have the law and you have also the what is called precedent, how different courts they apply the law. So you have both and there is no mistake. I'm very sorry. Similarly, if you want to know something beyond your experience, beyond your experimental knowledge, beyond the activities of the senses, then you have to accept the Vedas. There is no question of experimenting. It has already been experimented. It is already settled. The version of the mother, for instance, has to be accepted as truth. There is no other way. The other way has been described before, the four defects. And this is the other way. Either we accept superior knowledge or we have to battle forever with our four defects. And lose every time. Every life will be a disaster. We want to cheat anything. Okay. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Shruti, Smriti and Nyaya.
Yeah, but for this quote,
Puranam
Smriti as a friend and Kavi is like...
Yeah, it's like a wife. Like a wife. Who's it?
Like that poetry speaks like a wife or like a
wife,
a lover,
something like conjugal. Okay, so please next time please read everybody the introduction. See you again Thursday. Thank you very much.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.